It's good to be back. It's been far too long. All recharged from the All-Star break, ready to rock. Got some news to discuss here, of course, and then gonna get into one of Danny's favorite topics. In fact, when I suggested this to him, we didn't get a chance to talk that much over the break, but he instantly wrote up an entire sheet breaking down. I think we have like 5 or 6 pages worth of information on all these teams. So very excited to get going to discuss the great tank race of 2018, soon to be a relic of a bygone era. But we have one last wonderful tank race to talk about. But first, let's get to some news, starting with another bombshell from noted newsmaker Greg Popovich.
The sequencing of this, I think, is maybe the most interesting part of it. I don't necessarily think we need to get into a lot of the large scale things. We can, but Greg Popovich said that he would be surprised. This was, I believe, it was their first practice after, you know, during the All-Star break, but when they were getting back, saying that he would be surprised if Kawhi Leonard played this season. There has been some ambiguity that has, to my knowledge, has not been clarified on what this season means, whether that is regular season, season, or as my favorite optimistic person was saying, season meaning the physical season, so when it turns to spring, which is just awesome. Like that's March 30th, so okay, he won't play until March 30th, but after that it'll be okay.
It's March 21st. What are you talking about, man? Where did you go to school?
Sorry, March 20th. I meant March 20th. Hey, I haven't recorded with you in a week, so I can be a little bit rusty.
Were they teaching some like alternative thing in the Marin County schools about like, you know, spring?
Well, yeah,
they probably were,
but I don't remember it. But why this is, what makes this a different degree? Obviously, that is a huge story, and we need to talk about that story. Was what happened immediately after that, and that was the Woj piece. Which the bombshell part of that was that Kawhi Leonard has been medically cleared to play and is not being outed. And so you have these two things coming out at almost exactly the same time, presumably coming from the same basic camp, because there's no conceivable reason why Kawhi's people or Kawhi himself would want that revealed, because it doesn't exactly make him look good, even if it can be justified.
Yeah, I think you'd have to believe that it's likely coming from the Spurs camp. And it's rare that stuff gets out of the Spurs camp, although they have been, you know, a little bit less locked down of late. But that said, yeah, Kawhi's camp wouldn't want that out there. There's no possible reason that it could benefit him. Maybe it could be some player on the team who knows that that's the case and is leaking it. I don't think that that's necessarily where it would be from either. So if it is coming from the team, why on earth would you leak that? You know, I mean, it really makes very little sense to me, because you're going to alienate your player further. I mean, the last time that we saw something like this was Derrick Rose with the Bulls, and we know that that ended certainly extremely poorly. And I think it was really the fact that, obviously, Rose was never the same player, which was a big problem, but the fact that he was cleared to return in 2013 and did not was obviously a massive measure of frustration from the fan base. And this is another thing where, you know, he never had a surgery. If you're just a normal fan, you're thinking like, hey, why isn't this guy coming back? And it's just, you know, it makes the guy, the other thing that I always hate when teams say is, oh, well, it's just going to be a matter of pain management. Like, oh, you're a wuss if you basically like can't handle the pain and come back. But obviously, if you're in pain, A, you're not going to be as effective. B, you're probably going to favor it and hurt something else as well. But so I really don't understand what the point of this is. And Bontemps raised a point, which I think is an interesting one. I don't think that the chances of this are high. But if he doesn't play again this season, and we'll talk about the implications of that just for the Spurs this season in a moment, but if he doesn't play again this season, is it possible that just this could be his last game in a Spurs uniform? Because now he'll be eligible, regardless of whether he plays a minute more this year, for that designated player extension. If he either is offered that and doesn't take it, or perhaps after having missed an entire season, they would be loath to offer that to him. And then, you know, since he has a player option the next summer of 2019, when a ton of teams are gonna have cap space, and there's this idea that he's alienated from the organization, maybe there's a thought that they could try to move him.
It's surreal. And I had, you know, so you have these kind of competing elements in play. And one of them is, to this point, no player who has been offered the designated veteran contract, either as an extension or as a new contract, has declined it. But we have seen a few players get traded so the offer could never have been made. Paul George is among these. DeMarcus Cousins is one of those as well. Jimmy Butler.
Well, the Pacers surely would have offered it to George had he qualified. But yeah, Cousins and Butler, you could make the argument that part part of why perhaps they were traded was because the teams didn't want to offer them that.
Right. And this is different because, I mean, Kawhi last year, we included him in the four players we talked about in that in-depth podcast for MVP. And there's a very good argument to be made that per minute, which is not how the MVP is decided, he was that for the league. It was just that he had less playing time because the Spurs are very measured with how they play guys. And to have him basically miss this entire year is a game changer. And yes, San Antonio has been very good this year, especially in light of it. I mean, I picked Pop for Coach of the Year every time we've done awards, largely on that margin. And at the same time, if Kawhi Leonard isn't playing for them, they're not the same team. And all of a sudden, they become this team that can still win a bunch of regular season games, but is the squad of that kind of 3-8 mix that I think every Western Conference team would most want to play.
Yeah, the Spurs point differential projects to be below that of the Wolves, Thunder, and even the Jazz. They're looking at a high 40s win type of team right now, and there may be in their projection still some sort of thought that Leonard could return. It's really, I mean, the big benefit of this probably would be either the Thunder or the Wolves. If you imagine that either of those two teams could get the 3 seed, avoiding Golden State, and also you would say that the Warriors would be a big benefit as well if the Thunder could move up to the number 3 seed, although they have not been playing incredibly well themselves of late since Robertson went out. But yeah, just I mean, it kind of sucks though, man, if he really isn't going to play anymore. And it's funny because, you know, there have been a few rumblings from some of the Spurs beat writers, just like, oh, you know, I kind of have a gut feeling it'll be, you know, after the All-Star break he might start to ramp up again. And then Woj just saying in his piece that, you know, he's been working out with some supervision by the Spurs staffers, he was clear to say that, in New York of late over the All-Star break. So maybe there's some hope that he could return, that he could give it a go. Pop kind of, you know, in his comments and maybe this Woj piece, maybe there's a little more of like, hey, you know what, like, if you're gonna try it, you better do it soon, because, you know, we need to get you reintegrated and we don't want to just bring you back 2 weeks before the season ends. So maybe there's a little more hope here, and maybe this is just some subterfuge, but I don't know. It's very disconcerting, to be sure.
And the murmurs that we've heard in various circles about acrimony or just coolness, whatever, between Kawhi and the Spurs, if the path that it sounds like, especially with the Woj part, is coming
this
in the way we did.
This ain't
going to help. It's not going to help, and it could seriously hurt it. And so maybe we need to put more credence in that. I mean, San Antonio has been this, you know, mecca. They've been so simpatico for all these years. But A, Kawhi Leonard is an entirely different person. He wasn't a part of a lot of those great Spurs runs. He's not really a peer of Manu and Tim and Tony, guys who they didn't necessarily come up rigidly together, but they were all around at the same time for such a long time. And so I had always kind of dismissed that because it hasn't really been the Spurs way. But I'm way more open to it now than I was before. That does not mean Kawhi's going to leave. That does not mean anything like that. But I'm not writing it off the same way.
One reason for optimism and one reason for pessimism overall for the Spurs franchise. The reason for optimism, yeah, okay, they may not want to offer him that designated player veteran extension. You imagine if he gets offered that, especially coming off a year where he didn't play at all, you have to take it this offseason. And maybe, you know, he would, by the time they would be able to offer that, they can't do it until July 1st. And so maybe by that point he'll have proved that he's completely healthy again. Even if he does not play, he'll have another 2-3 months. I mean, they'll probably get eliminated in the first or second round, obviously, if he doesn't play. But also worth noting that if the Spurs decided, hey, you know what, we're not comfortable offering you that designated player veteran extension yet, they could wait until the beginning of training camp as well. The start of the season as well, you know, as the Russell Westbrook waited this year. So maybe he proves he's healthy in training camp and then plays. Or maybe they even wait until the very end of the season, and he's still, although it wouldn't be an extension, they could offer him well over $50 million more than another team could, with both being able to offer the 35% max and the extra year. So even then, you know, even if there is acrimony, I mean, he would still have to qualify for All-NBA so he could get it. But if he doesn't qualify for All-NBA again next year after not playing at all this year, then he probably wouldn't want to give him that contract anyway. So maybe they feel like, hey, you know what, like, sure, maybe he could leave, you know, maybe it's not as priority Cairo, but we can offer him so much more money than all these other teams. That's the positive. The negative is if they have to move on from him this summer or feel like they should, and then, you know, Greg Popovich, he's got this 2020 Olympics, but, you know, he's in his late 60s now. I mean, maybe this is just kind of the end of the Spurs as we know them, finally, as a real contender, which has been waiting on for so long. But then it looked like they could prop the door open with Kawhi. He was going to be so good. And then they're going to have all this cap space, which they've now squandered. And, you know, there's been rumors that part of Kawhi's discontent is the fact that they have no way of getting anybody else in now, or that nobody wants to come to San Antonio. But I still think if they had kept the door open a little bit more for this upcoming summer, that maybe that could have been different. So definitely, nothing is fait accompli yet, but it's very possible we could look back on this moment as a real crossroads for the Spurs franchise, where they just, you know, this is the end of this Spurs run, finally.
There's also a crazy risk involved with this that isn't really there with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has been discussed as being like the next super young superstar to change teams. Anthony Davis, if he were moved in the near term, would have multiple years under contract. Kawhi, let's say the Spurs decide to do that, it's a one-year thing. Now, some teams would see it as a rental plus, but
and
remember,
he's coming off a whole missed year as well. You're not going to get the same return.
You're not going to get the same return, and I wonder if the idea that him having medical clearance and not playing would give certain teams pause. I mean, we've already seen Kyrie.
And that's why this is so ridiculous, again, that this got out, because even if that's the case, like, why would you want to, like, shit all over his trade value at the very least?
So, yeah, it's a remarkable situation because it's the Spurs. I mean, it's remarkable either way, just because he's a huge part of the league, but this makes it so much harder to calibrate and harder to deal with, because, you know, players have been unhappy before, players have missed time. The Derrick Rose thing is probably the closest comp here, but the Bulls, even then, I mean, there were question marks with how they were as an organization that have never been that way with San Antonio.
All right, there's some more news that's piled up, but we'll save that for tomorrow's show. We're going to do a special Friday edition here since we've been off for so long. We'll get to the great tank race of 2018 momentarily, but first, this from one of Danny's most recent favorite companies, Stamps.com. You've been using them quite a bit lately with the publishing of your book.
I have. While I've been an online writer for a long time, one of the nice things there is that all you have to do is send out a link and somebody can read it if they choose to. When you have a book, it's a physical product, and that's really cool. The idea, I actually had this conversation during All-Star with one of my friends from law school, of like having something physical in your hands and saying, hey, I wrote this. That's really cool. The downside of it is if somebody wants one, especially if they want one that involves you, like it's signing it or something like that, you have to send it. And so there were certain people, very important, especially to me, who got early copies and got them sent. And so I was sitting there going, well, crap, how am I going to do that? Our schedules are kind of weird, getting to the post office and all that. And stamps.com was perfect because you can do it all from the comfort of your home. I have a scale, so making sure the packages, because sometimes people are getting multiple books. So you have all of that, and then you can arrange pickups and everything. So all of the elements of mailing things that used to be hard, and even the parts of it that honestly weren't that hard before, it makes everything easier and workable, whatever your situation.
Yeah, and if you, like Danny, would like to get started with stamps.com, you can get a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale at stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in our familiar Capspace code. It feels good to say Capspace again. I've missed it low these last week or so. Stamps.com, enter that Capspace code. That'll get you their special offer, 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Stamps.com, enter that code Capspace. Let them know that you came from us. All right, so how are we going to do this? Or you want to go? We've looked at 9 teams in the tank race. That includes the Nets and the Lakers, even though they don't have their pick because they're going to factor in these lottery odds.
It's actually 10 including them, which is really...
The Lakers are the 10th team?
Okay, yes, the Lakers are the 10th team. And I think that's just a basic point to make here, which is why this is so insane, is how many teams there are. Because these teams, all of them have similar incentives, especially the first 8. They all have their own draft picks. They are all, you know, not going to make the playoffs. And so it's not just 2 or 3 teams jockeying for position. That many teams means you have to push harder, because the difference between a successful tank and an unsuccessful tank is huge in terms of the draft pick that's available to you.
I love how you characterize it as that they have to push harder. Like, we have to be truly committed. And the Bulls have really started that, by the way. We'll get to them. I think they're going to factor in. And maybe it's not even fair to include the Lakers in this, although worth noting that their pick goes to Philly unless it's 2-5. I don't see any way that they get into 2-5 unless the lottery odds break the Celtics' way. The Celtics get that pick, that Lake Kings pick, 2-5 this year, and then they get the Kings unprotected next year unless it's top one, in which case they would get a Philly's pick. But yeah, I mean, we can talk a little bit about the Lakers. They are at 23-34 as of now, projected to go a robust 11-14 over their next few games by 538. They do have seven games against the bottom eight, but they don't really seem to have much motivation. I think the biggest to tank, obviously, or just to lose more games as an ancillary result of just what their normal behavior would be. I think the most likely way that they could get a lot worse would be if they just buy some guys out. But the only guy I really see as if they lost him would really hurt them might be KCP, much as I know Lakers fans that think he sucks. But I mean, I would expect them to just continue to play at the same rate that they've been playing, maybe not winning, you know, 11 out of 16 or whatever they've won recently, but I expect them to continue to play reasonably well.
I'll try to only say this once on the podcast, but what you want to consider for teams like the Lakers and the Nets that do not have their own pick is not that they're going to try to win every game out of spite because, hey, we don't have our pick, so screw whoever gets it. It's more an indifference. And indifference is a whole lot better than active structural tanking, but it is not the same thing.
If you're indifferent in this race, like, you're a fucking juggernaut compared to the rest of these teams.
You are, and that's why I noted for both the Nets and the Lakers how many games they play against the bottom eight, because those games will matter. But, you know, they're not going to be great teams overall. And so we'll see how that goes from there. But let's save those so we can talk about them a little bit towards the end, because their incentives are just so different. I think there are a bunch of different ways that you could order this, but I thought the most fair way was just to go in terms of current record. And we'll go through what the projections are and whether we think those are fair. But the team right now that is both has the worst current record and is projected by 538 to be the worst team at the end of the year is the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, and I would have to say, oh, man, I mean, there are just... I was about to be like, oh, yeah, these guys are the clear worst to me. I think I probably would pick them as my favorite to finish with the worst record. How do you feel about that?
I'm leaning actually away from them for one bigger reason, which is A, they have like a couple of them actually. One, they haven't really had the Elfrid Payton, Devin Booker combination. Payton actually, I thought he looked pretty good in the games they played, but Booker was out during that time before the break after the trade deadline. And also their coach is really trying to establish himself. And a lot of these players, even if they don't have a ton of pending free agents other than Payton and Alex Len, a lot of guys who I think want to play. And tanking really is about a couple things. One of them is the motivation of everybody involved. Another one is the talent. And I think the Suns, at least for the next couple weeks, are going to put out moderately competitive lineups. They're definitely flawed. They're going to have turnover. You know, they're going to have guys that struggle. But they're a little bit deeper. Like, I could see TJ Warren having a couple good games. I could see Elfrid Payton or Devin Booker going off, that sort of a thing. And sure, they could lose some of those games like they have in the past. But I don't know. I could see them getting a couple games that maybe they quote unquote shouldn't get and pushing out of it, but they have the potential to be seriously off.
Yeah, and they just have been so bad. I mean, both That's they true. And Sacramento have won so many more games than would be expected. And we went back to those first three games under Earl Watson. I almost said Earl Warren. I'm really rusty here. Those two people do not have a ton of similarities. But now they've started to really just be complete, especially on the road, just get completely blown out. I mean, that Warriors game a couple of weeks ago, right before the break, was when Steve Kerr just had the players coach the team and they lost by like 47 or whatever it was. I mean, that was just an incredible non-compete. So yeah, maybe with Payton, who presumably is going to play, I don't see him getting shut down. They want to see what they have in him. Booker, you could see him getting shut down. And also, they really haven't played that much better when he's been out there as well. And then, I mean, they've got so many young guys here who are going to need to be reintegrated. Alan Williams is going to come back. He might actually help them. Looks like Tyson Chandler is going to miss time with a neck injury now. Chandler and Dudley are likely to be shut down at some point. I mean, Dudley they've still played probably better with him on the floor than just about anybody else. And then they just have so many tank commanders on this team as well.
Marquise Chris is pretty spectacular in terms of that. If they just like, hey, Marquise, let's put the ball in your hands a lot more. Or and Josh Jackson has been a lot better, though I am very cautious. There have been people like, oh man, Josh Jackson looks so good. Take a look at how many shots he's been taking in a lot of these games. Yes, his scoring totals are up, but he's taking a ton of shots. So counting stats are, you know, they're a little bit shaky there. And Josh Jackson, just as a rookie, even if he is a little older than some of these guys, he'll make some bad decisions out there. So,
and they're going to start playing lineups like, we'll see, you know, they're going to play lineups
that make no sense.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be they started like Bender at center. I mean, these are kind of make them more interesting to watch, but like Bender at center and then TJ Warren and Josh Jackson at four. And it's just, there's no way that you're going to be able to stop anybody with a front court like that. And then they don't have anybody who can stop anyone in the backcourt.
They played Josh Jackson as the two against the Warriors. That had problems too.
Yeah, I think, and they're close to being worst in offense and worst in defense. I think they're a pretty darn good bet to be the worst defense in the league going forward here.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially because I think their best defensive players are going to play very little the rest of this year.
Well, and then they got Jay Triano at coach, who's never finished better than like the high 20s in defense. I mean, at least like the Kings have Dave Yeager, who has like somewhat of a track record of getting teams to stop somebody, even if they're going with their young guys. So I would say the Suns are, I mean, there are plenty of candidates here, and that's why this is so interesting, right? I mean, we've got what, eight teams, and then Brooklyn as well within what, three games of each other right now?
Yeah, I believe it is three games. And to focus with bad teams, you want to focus on the win column because they can make up losses, you know, if a team's played fewer games. And so right now, the Suns, the Hawks, the Kings, the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, the Magic are all at 18 wins. The Nets are at 19. The Bulls are at 20. They're really, really close.
And the Knicks are four games ahead, but I mean, man, they're going to be awful.
They lost their 0 for February tonight, so that's unfortunate for them.
Oh, yeah. They won at Orlando. That's right.
So I'll go through their three categories, two of which were your idea, one of which I've been tracking for more than 2 weeks now, which is, so the first category is double tank games. And so that is when these teams are playing each other. So because those are, A, they're going to be unbelievably bad basketball, but also they're going to be very important for settling this out because one team has to win. So Phoenix has five of those games left, which is more than some, but not far from the most. Two of those are at home, three of those are away, and I have no idea at this point. I haven't, if somebody nerdy enough wants to go back through it, I have no idea whether the home road thing makes a difference. Intuitively to me, I thought teams would try a little bit more at home, so I wanted to track the difference.
Yeah, well, I think you can, and we saw this with Sacramento in past years where they would just rest Cousins on the road for like all of April, for example. So I think the more road games, the more chances there are for these teams to rest their quote-unquote stars. Although, I mean, if you go through these teams, it really is remarkable. I mean, who do you think is the best player on all of these teams right now? That's an interesting question.
Marcus on all eight?
Yeah, probably Marcus Ole.
Aaron Gordon?
I mean, man, this is a third of the league we're talking about. I mean, this is just... maybe you could say, well, that means they, you know, there aren't like big stars that they can rest. I mean, at some point, Gasol is going to have to get shut down, right?
Let's not jump the Memphis section, my friend. But then the other two categories that we're doing for this, which were your ideas, which I think are going to be a lot of fun. The biggest blowout. So basically, like, what game has the potential to be like, oh, that's going to be a disaster. And what I picked for this one is they play at Houston on March 30th.
We're still on Phoenix, by the way.
We're still on Phoenix.
For those of you who perhaps justifiably criticize us for using too many pronouns, we may skip around a little bit here because I'm kind of punchy after an 18-hour drive back from Colorado, and this is also just a hilarious subject matter in any event.
So the Suns
weekend does not look good for them.
Yes, the Suns play at Houston on the Friday and then play at the Warriors on the Sunday. So that's not going
to
be great.
Oh, man, we already saw what happened. I mean, Houston put up like that 90-point first half on them.
In a game when Phoenix was trying.
And then the Suns had that loss on national TV. They don't have any more national TV games, do they? Because if they play on national TV, they may lose by 70. I mean, those two Friday night games, the one against Houston where they put up 90 points in the first half, and then that Spurs game when they trailed by like 35 in the first half. I mean, that would just be a disaster if they're on national TV again. We might not even, I think we should probably even prevent NBA TV from like looking in live to their games because they could just like lose 20 points in the game, like just because NBA TV like checked in on them from the studio show at this point.
So they have no network cable games, but they do have two NBA TV games, both of which look like they're going to be disasters, playing Boston Boston and the Warriors. I think those might get flexed out. I would hope that they do. Both of those are actually in the last 2 weeks of the season, too. So it's going to be even more egregious.
Yeah, and Boston and Golden State are probably going to be trying
I would think so. And the other category that you wanted, and I like this a lot, was the most critical game. And so that is in regards to the tank, not for any other purpose. And so the one that I picked was against the Atlanta Hawks on March 4th at Atlanta, because right now these have been the two worst teams in the league in terms of overall record. They're projected to be worst and tied for second worst, and it's the only time they play, so I picked it.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Although I do feel like, because Atlanta, I feel like they are in a different category than a few of these teams. I mean, we can talk about them now, tied with the Suns, as you mentioned, at 18 and 41. I guess because there's really so little time left right now, and we've really only got, 25 games left for most of these teams. And it's funny, too, to talk about, why this is such a big tank race when, as of right now, the worst of these teams has, 17, 18 wins. So that's really, we have seasons where teams only win 15 games or even less than that. So we're not going to have any of those this year.
Right. And I think that's also why it's so weird this year, is because if it had separated, I think that would have reduced the incentives, because if a couple of teams were at 13 or 14 wins, but now it's like, holy crap, if we lose almost all the rest of our games, we could have a good shot at getting the number one overall pick as opposed to getting the number four.
But the thing is, though, the Kings and the Suns, those are my two picks. I think I would put at least 50% of my eggs in those two teams' baskets for who's going to get the worst record, because those two teams actually are really bad teams, the level we're talking about. Those are 11, 12 win type of teams in terms of their point differential. They've just both gotten extremely lucky so far this year, whereas some of these other teams are kind of, they're about basically where they are. Some of them are even much better, the Mavericks are even much better than this. But let's talk about the Hawks. You mentioned they have four double tank games. Any anti-tanking motivation? You said no, there's not any. And certainly, I think the way that the organization has committed to taking on bad contracts, it has really committed to this rebuild just in an overall sense, you have to imagine that at some point they're going to start shutting people down. No, actually, I think there is some anti-tanking motivation just because of Coach Bud. I mean, I think he just, I don't know how on board he is. I don't think, especially if you think hey, maybe if you're one of these people who thinks that maybe he's going to leave pretty soon because he's not really, he lost his president of basketball operations powers, and then, he's a pretty competitive guy. He may want to say, hey, you know what, I don't want losing, 20 of our last 21 games on my record. Maybe that would be part of this.
It could be. They also, because they don't have as many pending free agents, depending on, Muscala and Dedmon have player options, which they could go either way on. Ilyasova is one, but it looks like he's choosing to stay there. And so generally that's a very different thing. If he wanted to get shut down or something like that, he could have facilitated a trade. There are a lot of things he could have
done. I'm not sure he's good enough to get a bunch of money from one of these teams that still has an exception available.
Right. That's totally fair. So for me, the players who could get shut down, which could really change things for them, would be Bazemore and Schroeder. And it's not like those guys have been dominant this year, but Atlanta doesn't really have replacements for either of them. So that could be an issue. And then maybe late Ilyasova, Dedmon, Muscala, guys kind of that range.
Yeah, and Bud, to back up what I was saying earlier, says that Ilyasova is expected to remain the starting power forward. He's pretty important because he's the only guy in their front court really who can shoot much. I guess Muscala maybe falls in that category a little bit, but he's having a down year. And that he's going to pretty much keep the rotation the same for the time being. Maybe we'll get to that, to the point. But yeah, I mean, when management and coaching staff are not on the same page, I think that makes things a little bit more difficult. And also, I guess it's an interesting question too, of if the team is experienced at tanking, does that make them better at it? Or are these teams like the Bulls or the Hawks, who this is kind of the first year that they're doing this, does that mean that they can they feel like they have enough equity to really be shameless about it? I think it might be the latter, especially when you see what the Bulls have been doing lately.
Well, and that ties in with with the Suns last year, the egregiousness of Eric Bledsoe. Does that mean that they can't do something so brazen this year? Like with Booker, let's say.
Yeah, and he's young enough too that, that's a little different than Bledsoe. Bledsoe, sure, the injury issue. Although Booker has had enough nagging injuries this year that maybe, there's a little bit more to that. And also, I think teams are not going to be able to just be like, oh, Eric Bledsoe, we're just going to rest you for a month and a half like they did last year. I think that they're going to at least have to invent an injury this year. I don't know how much deterrent effect that'll actually have.
I think another reason why the Hawks might end up towards the top in the bad way for their fan base in certain ways of this group is that they also don't really have great tank commanders. They also have a good coach, but Tyler Dorsey, Cav Kavanaugh, Bembry, like all those guys are fine, and they're, I don't think they're going to be, they're not destructive enough. So sure, Dennis Schroeder can shoot them out of some games and all that kind of stuff, but he's still more talented than a lot of the other guys we're going to talk about on this list. So that, I think that works to their, that works to their detriment in terms of the tank, because they just, you know, they kind of are who they are, and the guys they're relying on are fine.
Yeah, hilariously, they also have a Friday Sunday with Golden State, at Golden State and at Houston in March, and we already mentioned their most critical game against Phoenix. But yeah, I would say that if we're just going to rank these teams based on like how well they're going to play the rest of the year, you know, I'd certainly have them above the Suns and the Kings. I would probably have them above the Magic.
I'd have them the above Grizz, the Grizzlies.
Well, I mean, I don't know though. Like, they still have Tyreek. They still have Marc Gasol. Like, the that might be the two best players, at least in terms of how they played this year on any of these teams.
Yeah, that's fair.
And the Grizz are projected to do a little bit better as well. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's tough. I mean, the Bulls are going to be a tough one to predict. The Grizzlies are going to be a tough one to predict as well. But yeah, I do think the Hawks are, I would guess that they will not finish in the bottom three unless they make some serious changes. Let's talk about Dallas, whose owner just got fined $600,000 for revealing that not only does he believe it is better to lose games, he said that on Dr. J's podcast and later apologized, saying that he was being too much of a fanboy, and not good when getting fined $600,000 is not the worst thing that happened to your organization in a week. But then he also revealed, Cuban did, that he told the players that it would be better to lose, and I still think those players are going to try. But I mean, just, it's got to be pretty insidious when you know that that ownership is specifically telling you that. He's not even making public comments, but he's specifically telling you that, and then telling everyone that he made those comments to them. I mean, that's just really bad.
It is. What mitigates that to a point with Dallas is that they have a bunch of guys that I could absolutely see be a part of their rotation who are pending free agents of various stripes. So Nerlens Noel, if he can come back from this thumb injury, he'll be unrestricted. McDermott, Salah Mejri, and Yogi Ferrell are all restricted, and those guys could all benefit from a little bit more attention. Just, there are going to be so few mid-level exception spots, all that kind of stuff out there. So those guys could be pushing. I've talked to Jonathan Charks for Real GM Radio, which will come out on Friday probably, and he's been following the Mavericks closely because he lives in Texas, and he was saying something interesting that Carlisle has started doing recently is playing guys together in unusual combinations. Some of this is due to Devin Harris being traded and that kind of thing, but like, he apparently, Maxi Kleba and Salah Mejri hadn't played together all season, then now they're playing like serious minutes together. It's like, oh, okay, let's put guys together who have no chemistry. Let's see how that works.
Yeah, nonetheless, though, the only way they've gotten to this point is just their incredibly terrible record in close games, which even if they kind of try, quote unquote, it's still going to, they're not going to match, you know, the 5-22 record they had at one point in close games. And in fact, they've started to play better in close games recently. They don't have a ton of vets who are playing. I mean, I imagine that Dirk will get more strategic rest than he's gotten so far. You mentioned also their anti-taking motivation of maybe wanting to be a free agent destination, although it does seem to be that they have embraced the idea that it may not happen for them, especially with the demise of DeMarcus Cousins, who they were long linked to. There doesn't really seem anyone who's going to rocket them back up into being, you know, a solid playoff team next year on the free agent market, so they may sit this out a little bit and go the bad contract route, especially if there are assets out there to get. Buyouts, I regret to inform you that they have already waived Josh McRoberts, who would have been an excellent potential tank.
Oh, that's
commander,
right. I totally forgot.
Unfortunately, yeah, they waived him. I think they were just, I mean, I think he only played like one game all year, and they were clearly just holding on to him for salary ballast, and then when he didn't get traded, they waived him to get. So, I mean, they're probably going to be doing a lot of, I think they just signed, oh no, they had Antonius Cleveland, and he signed elsewhere recently. But they've got all these young guys. Dennis Smith is not an effective player. He's going to get even more all you can eat in terms of shots and minutes now. But I just think that they're too well coached, even if they're not trying that hard, and have a lot of young guys who are going to play hard. So I think I expect them again to kind of surge, quote unquote, into, you know, the 5, 6, 7 type of range here. I don't see them among the lowest tier of these teams. team.
I agree with that. They also have 6 double tank games, which is on the higher end, 2 home, 4 away. And their biggest blowout game, yeah, I picked.
And they'll probably be favored in a lot of those games.
I think they could win. And they already beat the Lakers, who do not even qualify in this. They had that clutch win against them. I think the game they're going to get annihilated in is at Cleveland on April 1st. Cleveland has been a great offensive team, and so that could tie in. And their most critical game, for most teams, actually, for the tank purposes, I picked games where the team was at home because it just seems like they're more likely to win those games. But theirs is at Orlando on April 4th. This could end up being one of the worst games of the year because both teams are on the tail end of a back-to-back with travel. It's in Orlando, but each team is going to do that, so it could just be heinous.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good. Another stealth tank commander, potentially, for this team. They've been talking about really bringing back Nerlens Noel, and I want to say he has like a negative 18 net rating so far this year, and they want to really give him another chance. And that makes sense, obviously, but if they continue to play as poorly when he's on the floor as they did earlier in the year, then that could maybe change things for them a little bit. And also, when you consider that Noel is very likely to be playing with another big who can't shoot, I mean, I don't know if you want to say Kleba is in that category, but they're Harrison Barnes, Wes Matthews, like both of those guys could very easily be like big time rest candidates as we get down the end of the year. So if they take those guys out, they're gonna have no shooting at all. Seth Curry is already out for the year as well, so they're very reliant on those wing guys, and if those guys don't play, then they're really gonna have just nothing at all in terms of shooting.
Let's go to Sacramento. I felt a lot better about picking Sacramento as the team that ends the season with the worst record before Thursday night when they almost beat Oklahoma City. That game, Russ hit a 3 with they took the shot with 1 second to go. They are 18-40. 538 projects them to finish 26-56, which is the fourth worst record in the league. It's actually, and they're alone in fourth, which is weird. And their anti-tanking motivation would be more on the structural end with their, depending on how Vlade and Dave Yeager feel about their places within the organization. If they feel stable, then there's plenty of incentive. And remember, they have a different set of circumstances because they do not have their own pick next year. So this is really their one shot. I think that's going to lead to some serious buy-in. The other reason it's going to happen is because they're off.
Yeah. Again, I mean, they for a long time this season were the worst offense and the worst defense. And they also have vets who they lost George Hill, who I think, I don't know how much he was necessarily helping them, but he was at least a guy who could hit some three-pointers and, wasn't playing at the absolute hardest in the world, but still was much better defensively than anyone they have. You have to, Zebo has been hitting like every jump shot for a couple month period here. You imagine he will get shut down pretty quickly. Kostas Koufos, they had found something on occasion with he and Cauley Stein playing together. Remains to be seen whether Iman Shumpert will get into their rotation very much or not, although he's had some issues coming back from a surgery, although the Kings appear to believe that he can actually help them save $9 million next year. No, too bad that talent's going to get edited out. But so maybe he'll play. The danger for their tank maybe is that, guys like De'Aaron Fox, Bogdanovich has actually been pretty good, that maybe just some of their rookies will start playing better. But they still have just like no experience at all on the wing.
I believe they're the only team in this mix that gives all of their point guard minutes to rookies. I think that could end up really helping them here.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll help them to push hard, as you said so eloquently. And so Scal is going to play more, obviously. Buddy Hield will probably play more. Frank Mason came back today, although he actually could help them a little bit. I don't know if they're going to play Bruno Caboclo. That'll be interesting. They're going to have some pretty ugly games as well, including a back-to-back at Utah after playing at Golden State.
That could end up being a disaster. I mean, teams often struggle with Utah at the tail end of back-to-back, second highest elevation in the league, and doing that after playing the Warriors is going to be rough. Even though they did beat the Warriors at Oracle in their other matchup this year, though Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant did not play in that game. Their most critical one is they've host Atlanta on March 22nd. That could end up being, it's late enough in the season that both those teams could kind of see what they are. And something else with the Kings is that because they have so many guys on rookie contracts, I think they will actually be more worth watching than a vast majority of these teams, because Scal, De'Aaron Fox, Fox, Buddy Hield, Frank Mason, like all these guys, Bogdanovich, as long as they play him. Like,
at least there's some curiosity about these guys.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so, yeah, I think that they still are my prediction to finish with the worst record, but their feistiness in weird games like this, remember they also beat Cleveland at the Golden One Center earlier this year. They might end up swinging a couple games that they have no business winning, but I still think their combination of being a bad team and the clear-cut incentives compared to some of these because they don't have their pick in 2019 will push them to the absolute bottom.
Yeah, as I said earlier, Kings and Suns are to me the clear picks for favorites to be 1-2 in the lottery seating. If you would like to look a lot better than all of these teams are going to look on the court for the rest of the season, allow me to suggest our friends at Movement Watches. This company is growing like crazy. They now have sold almost 2 million watches. We used to say they've sold over 1 million watches. Now they're almost up to 2 million in 160 plus countries. So if you're an international listener, great way to support the pod by going to movement.com, mvmt.com/capspace URL. That will get you 15% off today with free shipping and free returns at movement.com, mvmt.com/capspace. And what I'd suggest to you is just go check out that URL and you will be extremely impressed, I think, with the style of these watches, considering that they start at just $95. And that, of course, is before you get that 15% off discount. They've got classic design, quality construction, styled minimalism. My fiance loves the one that she has. My mom has one. She actually bought gifts for her nieces, my cousin. So a man or woman, it makes it a great gift. And once again, the way to get started with them, movement.com, mvmt.com/capspace is that URL. Join the movement and let them know that you came from us with that /capspace URL. So where are we going next here?
To a team that actually lost tonight and facilitated their tank, the Orlando Magic, 18-40. 538 projects them to finish tied for fifth worst record with Dallas and Memphis at 28-54. What makes them more volatile than teams are two big different factors. One is they have the most double tank games, 8, they counting the one today when they lost to the Knicks in Orlando. The other being that they had a couple of talented players just return. Aaron Gordon, who is a pending restricted free agent, Nick Vucevic, who has one more year in his contract. So my thought before today was that, maybe they'll pick up a couple of games during this time. They're getting those guys back. And about halfway through that game, I felt, oh man, that was such a smart call. And then they got blown out in the second half as the Knicks actually played some defense. And then you remembered, oh yeah, that's right. They can lose games pretty easily right now. And they have an absolute ton of guys that they could shut down depending on how they feel about this.
Yeah, Terrence Ross, remember him, actually could be back at some point. By the way, I didn't remember hearing that he also suffered a non-displaced fracture of his tibial plateau in addition to that MCL sprain. That's probably why it's taken so long for him to get back. I mean, that was November 29th. We haven't heard word one about him returning, which normally for an MCL sprain, 2 months would be about then. He's just started running. So maybe he's got a ways to go before he even starts practicing yet, but maybe he could help them to some degree, and he's going to want to try and at least get back healthy. I actually think that, amazingly, John Isaac, who is supposed to play with their Lakeland G League team over the weekend, potentially might help them if he plays more, because then they won't be playing those awful two big lineups any longer. And they've also been very unlucky in close games. I mean, one of my predictions for this month was that they would actually begin to play better, losing at home to this Knicks team and giving up 26 points to Trey Burke is not a great start there. But nonetheless, I think when you consider some of these free agencies, that they're getting some guys back from injury, even though they moved on from Peyton, they still have at least like semi-competent point guard play with both Mack and Augustin. I don't think they're like going to play really well or anything, but I'd have them kind of ending up in the 4-5 type of range, I would say, rather than the absolute bottom.
Especially because with getting Gordon and Vooch back, I think they're going to give those guys at least a couple of weeks, and that could swing a couple of games. They have a lot of these against the dregs, and
and Vucevic, they're going to want to play, in case they could maybe trade him or
exactly.
Something too, I would say.
And they also, they have steady vets at the point guard spot. They're not necessarily the most talented, but I think that hurts the idea of a tank. And Hezonja can go both ways. He's been very productive when he's gotten more playing time, but his brashness, with his aggressiveness as a shooter, will help them win some games maybe and help them lose some games. So you could say that he can be a tank commander at moments, but not the same way, and he's not going to have the opportunity nearly as much now that Gordon's back, and especially if Isaac returns and they actually want to play him, because Isaac is a far bigger part of their future than Hezonja.
Yeah, with Vucevic back, although he's really benefited from great three-point luck on both ends of the floor when he's been out out there. We'll see less of Biombo, who has a negative 11.6 net rating. They moved on from Elfrid Payton, who had a negative 7.6 net rating. And John Simmons, who was playing so well at the start of the year, sprained his ankle today. We'll see how much time he ends up missing. But some of their worst net rating guys are actually going to be playing a fair amount less, although I don't know how much to ascribe their struggles to those particular players. They don't really, I think a lot of their issues were just from having, like, not only the injuries, but then, I mean, with Vucevic out, Gordon out, Isaac out for large periods of time, I mean, they're giving time to a lot of guys who are not very good. And so I think that's another reason why they're going to start playing better. I think unless they really start shutting guys down, I think they're just going to be kind of run of the mill bad for the rest of the season. You know, I would project them, you know, kind of playing at like a 25, 27 win type of pace the rest of the year. And in fact, 538's projection has them going 10 and 14 the rest of the season.
Fournier is a big one to watch just because they don't have a perfect guy to replace him, but they have shot creation at other spots. So yeah, I agree with that broadly speaking, but the variance, because they have 8 double tank games, 7 left, is going to be important. Let's move on to Memphis.
Well, one other thing, we got to talk about what their biggest potential blowout.
Oh yeah, so they play at Toronto on April 8th, late in the year. By that point, anybody who's sitting will be sitting. It's the front end of a back-to-back, and then their most critical game, we talked about this in the Dallas section, that game where they host Dallas, that is a tail end of a back-to-back for both teams, and that's on April 4th.
Yeah, that Toronto game, the only reason why perhaps that wouldn't be a total blowout is if Toronto's already wrapped up the number one seed by that point.
That would be a little early. It's possible if Boston slips back a little bit.
They have a home game on the last day of the season against the Wizards, and we saw how ridiculously they tried to tank. Or actually, no, did they actually try and play in that game? I think they kind of did, actually.
I think they did.
Detroit, the last game of the season last
year. God, that was amazing.
Their game at the Knicks is going to be critical. I mean, they've actually got an amazing stretch here, Danny. Oh, wow. Okay, so March 24th, home against the Suns, then home against the Nets, then home against the Bulls, then at Hawks, at Knicks, then home against the Mavs. So they have 6 games in a row against bottom fellow 10. Tankers.
And oh, man, and
they better start shutting dudes down quick.
And remember, the game after that is against Charlotte, and Charlotte, by that point, could be there too.
Oh, wow. But I think their remaining schedule is relatively easy, though. I mean, obviously, when they have that stretch. But all right, yeah, let's get to the Grizzlies now. Also, 18 and 38, 2 games behind the Magic in the all-important loss column, projected to finish a game worse than the Magic at 27 and 55. Tough to say what their motivation is. They obviously should be really tanking. I mean, this is at least the way they see themselves as, oh, we got Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. These guys are like, you know, John Stockton and Karl Malone. Like, we're going to keep these guys around and win 50 games forever or never again. But if that's how they see themselves, that almost should be more motivation to this. Oh, this is the 1 year, so we better tank it. And also the fact that their 2019 pick is top 8 protected to the Celtics. So they have a little bit of that same king motivation as well. But then you do some dumbass shit like not trade Tyreke Evans, so who knows what they're doing.
They also have this weird mix of young guys that are intriguingly capable, like Wayne Selden. I like Wayne Selden, but I think they should play him. He's better than some of these.
They've continued to play very hard.
They have. And they do have a lot of guys beyond Conley, who's already been shut down, that they can shut down. Gasol, Chandler Parsons, Jamichael Green. You know, basically their ideal starting lineup. You can shut all those guys down except Wayne Selden. Their pending free agents aren't that strong. Obviously, Tyreke is the headliner. Chalmers, I'm sure, would love to establish his stock a little bit. Harrison's non-guaranteed, but I don't think he's playing for a contract. I would expect that he will be back next year. And they have 6 double tank games, 3 home, 3 away. That's on the higher side. And if they're playing hard in those games, or at least some guys, that's probably enough to throw that in some real jeopardy. Like if they win 4 of those 6 or something, then that gets them, you know, that probably gets them above the bottom team.
So there's a couple of interesting stats here. We talked about potentially, you know, who is going to get shut down and what that would do. They actually are even on the season with Marc Gasol off the floor. And they are negative 9.4 when Tyreke is off the floor. So, and they really just cannot score when Tyreek is off the floor. 99.4 offensive rating. So he, in some ways, might be their most critical player, and they kept him.
and that also makes it so much more complicated, because presumably part
they're
of
they're actually
rationale...
positive for the season, by the way, when Tyreek is on the
That's
floor.
Amazing.
0.2 net rating when he's on the floor.
And
he's not going to continue to play this well and shoot this well, and you know they're going to be playing more young guys and blah, blah, blah. But still, that's a remarkable
And considering
stat.
they kept him around, presumably to re-sign him, it gets even more fraught, because that means it's exceedingly unlikely that they're not going to buy him out. I don't know what that means in terms of shutting him down. I guess that would just be kind of talking to him and seeing what he wants, because if you want a guy to come back, then you want him to be happy, and whatever he wants in terms of being happy. Does he want to mitigate the risk a little bit and just say, hey, I've had a really good year, I want to walk away from it at this point? Does he want to compete for sixth man of the year? I don't know how. He's probably actually not going to be eligible. I haven't gone through his numbers recently, but all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Tyreek could really gum up the works for them in a couple of games. And also, like some of these other teams, they're real tank commander type guys, or more, they have all these weird young bigs. Those guys don't have the ball in their hands enough to be really destructive.
Yeah, and I think they're going to continue to play hard, and at least defensively, they've got JB Bickerstaff, an interim coach, is going to continue to try. I mean, the whole organization is carping about all these foul calls and stuff. Like, it seems like they're still really trying. And their defense on the season, you know, is not horrible. They have the 20th ranked defense in the league and a negative 4.1 net rating. And they're going to have to really, really step it up if they're going to compete in this race. And they also don't have like an incredibly difficult schedule the rest of the way either. I mean, they had like, you had their biggest blowout is at Minnesota. That's actually not that rough of a game.
Yeah, they play Cleveland on Friday night, but they host them, and then they don't really have that many road games against good teams. They have, you know, Minnesota twice. They have, oh yeah, I should probably pick Minnesota the second time, because that'll be on the tail end of back to back. So yeah, April 9th is the bigger blowout than the other time they play them. But yeah, I mean, I don't think they play the Rockets or the Warriors at all the rest of this year, and I think they only play OKC once. So yeah, they'll have an opportunity here to you know, play some games against teams that they can beat. Whether they should beat them or not is a very different question. And so what I picked for their most critical game late in the year, they host the Sacramento Kings. Also, the added emotion with Zebo and to a lesser extent Vince Carter returning to
and Dave Yeager
to the FedEx Forum, that could end up being
if he could deny the Grizz a loss in that game, it really would be, you know, just so satisfying for his coaching career.
But yeah, so my instinct with Memphis is that they don't end up in that real bottom group, but anywhere in that next range from like 3 or 4 to all the way to 8, I think they could be anywhere in there.
So the Bulls are 20-38. They have a few more wins than they might like to have at this point in the season. That awesome December that they had is really going to come back to bite them potentially. Although in their defense, you know, it wasn't actually possible to trade Nikola Mirotic until January 15th because he re-signed with full bird rights. They are projected to finish though 29-53, so to go 9-15 the rest of the way. Don't see really any anti-tanking motivation for this team other than young guys just trying to establish their careers. I think Fred Hoiberg has largely played to good reviews this year. The front office, this tanking was part of the plan. And they certainly, with the benching and just straight up like inactivity of Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday today, have signaled that they are going to go all out. Cristiano Felicio started. Cameron Payne is in the rotation now for sure. Although everyone's saying he's going to play a little bit better, but they want to find out what they have in him. Fine. They did exercise his option. That's probably a good idea. You did leave out another key tank commander though, Danny. Paul Zipser. I can't believe you didn't mention him at all. Although big problems for their tank effort, he left the game with foot pain on Thursday, so that's a little bit of an issue. But I think they played well. You know, they only lost by one.
It took a pretty massive collapse late. I mean, they were up 5 with 35 seconds to go, I believe, and that's actually a part of the reason why I think they're not going to be at the bottom of this, is because they have Dunn and Levine, who both for different reasons are going to push. Dunn is a noted competitor and trying to establish himself in the Bulls. I mean, they could be a contender for point guards, even though they gave up resources. He was a part of the Jimmy Butler trade. And Levine, I mean, he's a pending restricted free agent. I think he's going to try his hardest, at least offensively, for the remainder of this season.
But, and you said offensively, that could mean he's going to just take every shot. And also, they're going to and need him to take every shot, and his defense could really suffer from that. I mean, to the extent that it can get any worse, you would expect that perhaps that could happen. So he could be like a solid, like, stealth tank commander potentially.
I also think Markkanen, just he's consistent enough, and it can be a positive that I think that could hurt their tanking efforts as well. He's good enough to cause.
And Bobby Portis is always going to play hard too. I mean,
Bobby Portis had 38 tonight.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
yeah, I really would like to go back and see how it's possible that he could score 38 points in a game. I mean, I guess he just made a bunch of jumpers.
That sounds like a 15 and 60 topic, my friend. and we are looking for the topics for teams like this, especially the teams that are in this conversation as well. The game I picked for their biggest blowout is they play at Houston on March 27th. That's going to be an absolute disaster. And an early, most critical game for them, they host Memphis March 7th. That, you know, I think that'll be clarifying for kind of both these teams, because I expect both of them will not be sitting their best players at that point. And that's really the deciding element for this for them, is when do they start sitting the guys they have that can actually play? Chris Dunn, Larry Markkanen, and Zach LaVine. We've already seen it.
Because all those guys are young now. I mean, they're going to, you know, they talked about maybe Lopez could come back and play a little bit, or Holiday could come back and play, but like you have to imagine those guys aren't going to play that much. I think the key is going to be, you know, Payne, Felicio, Zipser, like how much are those guys going to just kill them, and how much are those guys really going to play? Because I think the rest of their young guys are like, you know, okay enough. Noah Vonleh is okay-ish. You know, I mean, these are guys who at least will like compete in defense and you know, have at least established like replacement level of play. Like you really, if you really want to get down there, you got to get these guys who just, you know, are horrible. And that's what Payne, Felicio, and Zipser have been in their Bulls careers. I guess actually not last year, but this year they have been.
I feel like that's a pretty solid lead in to the team that of these, I think the only of these eight teams that won today, because the Kings ended up snatching victory or defeat from the jaws of victory. The Knicks, 24 and 36. They're projected to be a little bit separate from this group, though I think some of that is just still some preseason stuff, and just they had Kristaps Porzingis until a couple weeks ago. So 538 projects them to finish 33 and 49, but being at 24 wins already with the one today means that they're going to have to fall like a stone, because I think a few of these teams aren't even going to get to 23. So that's going to be a challenge.
That's quite possible.
And their anti-tanking motivation, I don't know how Hornacek's feeling about his job. You know, the front office has changed over since he took over.
I think he's feeling quite poor. I think like that most of the reporting seems to indicate that.
Well, and the Noah stuff,
he's like coaching for his job.
And I thought I saw some reporting when I was at All-Star that there was a physical altercation with Noah, which is a little bit different than the reporting that I had seen. That gets into some complicated stuff. They also do have a weird batch of pending free agents. Kyle Quinn has a player option. He could decline. Michael Beasley, Jarrett Jack, Trey Burke all could be free agents this coming summer. And, you know, they have reasons to want to shine. You know, they have reasons to want to play. And so that's a lot of their ball handling. But they have Emmanuel Mudiay, and that could be very useful.
Yeah, Trey Burke, they got to stop playing him a little bit.
Yeah, he scored 23 tonight?
26.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. 0.8 net rating with Trey Burke on the floor, and he hasn't played much with Porzingis. Now, of course, these projections that have them with 33 wins this season, so they're projected to go 9-13 the rest of the year. They seem a great bet to be much lower than that, because A, they're not going to be trying, and B, Kristaps Porzingis is out for the year with that torn ACL. With Porzingis off the floor, scrolling down, negative 6.1 net rating with him off the floor, which actually that is they have their worst net rating when Porzingis is off the floor, but still only negative 6.1. Like, I don't think that's actually going to cut it to really get them down into the depths that they're going to need to plumb here.
But they can do some load management on a few of these players: Tim Hardaway Jr., Enes Kanter, Courtney Lee, and then the vets Beasley and Jack. I think Beasley could end up, you know, being a positive for them in certain elements. And then also they can play Frank Ntilikina a lot more. And while I love him defensively, you know, just say, hey Frank, take a bunch of jump shots. That can work out reasonably well. And I haven't seen a ton from Dotson yet, but usually rookies are not exactly productive in terms of, you know, those sorts of minutes. So they're going to have an opportunity. One thing that's striking about the Knicks schedule, and it's going to be worth watching, in their final 11 9 games. They only play one against a bottom 8 team, and that is they host Orlando on the 3rd of April. And also remember that a lot of teams get up to play at Madison Square Garden. It's like, hey, we're playing at the Garden and all that kind of stuff. You also get the, you know, the Sunday afternoon games are going to be some amazing garbage. But I could see them just losing a couple of those games, like the double tank ones where it's like, hey, we're playing at Madison Square Garden, we're playing the Knicks, and they just like a guy scores 20 or something like that and ends up beating them.
Yeah, you could see them also shutting down like a Kyle O'Quinn or an Enes Kanter late. You're forgetting another potential tank commander, the Unicornet, Luke Cornett, -27 or -20.7 net rating in 48 minutes, but he's gonna get some shots up if he's out there.
And on the MSG line, what I picked, I think they're the only team that the biggest blowout I picked was a home game, and that's because they host the Warriors in a couple days, and I think feel like they're gonna get absolutely demolished.
Yeah, we'll see. The Warriors are really, you know, their defense is not what it used to be. So and Moutier, you know, he's gonna play plenty. He started, and
yeah, at the beginning of the game he was
always been awful.
They were at the beginning of that game they were -17 in his first 16 minutes, but that toned down a little bit when they played better in the second half.
So the last thing we need to talk about, because we kind of hit on the Lakers a little bit already, is the Nets. And yeah, okay, no tanking motivation because they don't have their pick. It belongs to Cleveland, of course, but a couple of reasons. Number one, they've been awfully. They're 1-9 in their last 10. They are have the tied for second worst projection at 26-56. So then again, these are of course very much bunched up. They have 7 games against the bottom 8, so there's a lot of volatility there. And they also have just shown a willingness to bench their vets late in the season when they haven't had their pick the last couple of years anyway, just to kind of maintain or whatever. You know, you could see D'Angelo Russell, who's been off injured. You could see Dinwiddie, who they might try to extend, getting shut down. Hilariously, you mentioned Timofey Mozgov as a benching candidate. I don't think he's played in the last 3 months.
No, he did. I saw him. I also saw him coaching at Basketball Without Borders, so maybe it was just me seeing him on a court made me think that I saw him play basketball.
Yeah, or maybe he's playing at the end of a lot. Well, but have an amazing tank commander, though, and that's Jahlil Okafor.
They have a crazy arsenal of young guys if they want to go to this. I mean, Isaiah Whitehead can play some meaningful minutes for them.
Oof.
They can go Stauskas, Jahlil. They have all these sorts of, like, because if they sit guys, they have all these young guys that they can give minutes to, and they probably will. And
Damari is the guy who's critical for them. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has been injured. You could see both of those guys getting shut down, and then they just have absolutely nothing on the wing. You could see Joe Harris as well, a pending free agent. They could kind of just, you know, take it a little easy with him, so he doesn't get hurt before his free agency. There are a lot of candidates here. I think that they're, and then if anything, now they did start D'Angelo Russell. They're going to start Russell, and he's another stealth tank guy. By the way, he's been pretty bad since he got back. I think he has had one good game, but other than that, he struggled. So if they play he and Dinwiddie together, that'll be interesting. But Russell, especially defensively, is another stealth tank candidate.
The other important element for them is that their good players aren't good enough to elevate if the other players are sabotaging them. Like, yeah, sure, Spencer Dinwiddie can have some nice games. He can do that. Alan Crabb is a talented guy. I don't think, other than if he goes off like he did that one game a couple weeks ago, that Crabb is going to win you a lot of games. He helps your team be better, but that's just not his strength.
Yeah, it's really a shame for the Cavaliers that Jared Allen has showed as much promise as he has in his starting, because if they just had really no young center candidates, they'd be playing Okafor more, and he is a -26.2 net rating in 286 minutes, 91.1 offensive rating, 117 defensive rating for Jahlil Okafor as a net.
Well, it is good that they received that second round pick in that trade rather than giving it out.
Oof, yeah, man. All right. Any other like big realizations you've come to here? Should we just do like our final projected order?
We can do that. So for me, I think I think Kings most likely to have the worst record, then the Suns. Then it gets a little bit stickier. I think I'm going to go Hawks, Magic, then Grizzlies, Bulls, Nets, Mavericks. I think that's where I'm going to go. And then the Knicks.
I don't know if I can go all the way here, but I mean, if we want to do our usual tier system, system. I'd sure. say Suns and Kings are like the worst tier. I mean, and they've just been so much worse throughout the course of the season than any of these other teams. I mean, both those teams are -8 net rating or below, and I think the next worst after that is like 6. And most of these, I mean, Dallas, you know, we're talking about them, they've got like a -2.5 net rating. You know, that's just, it's going to be tough for them to play badly enough here. I think I would actually say, if I had to pick a specific team to be the third seed, I would actually say the Nets. I think that they just have been playing so poorly lately, and they've had all the motivation in the world to try and win these last 2 years, and that hasn't helped them at all. So whether they're trying or not, I think they could end up looking pretty bad here to be the third seed. But I would also put the Hawks in the same category as them as well. And then I think the rest of it's kind of a crapshoot after that. Maybe you could throw the Magic in there, but I still think the Magic just have too many NBA players now with all these guys getting healthy, and have shown the capability to actually play well at some point in the season. The Bulls, to me, are the biggest enigma, because I think they're going to try the hardest out of any of these teams. But again, they probably just have too much quality in their young players. I mean, unless they're going to be very reliant on Felicio, Payne, and Zipser, and the Zipser injury could be critical here, Danny. I hope you acknowledge that. So the Bulls have the most volatility in this to me, and maybe the Grizz as well, depending on what happens with Gasol and Evans. But I think as long as those two guys are playing and are healthy, you know, the Grizz are going to struggle to get near the top five.
Well, it's something else for Chicago that will be a problem for the tank, is that after this 3-game road trip where they, you know, they might even win at Brooklyn, it's possible, they host Dallas and Memphis on their next homestand. I could absolutely see them winning both of those games. And if they win both of those, they're pushing, because they're already at 20 wins. They're already ahead of all of these teams. That could push them closer to the line where it's basically like they would have to lose out or close to it to really stay in contention for the number one pick. They could still get 3 or 4, absolutely. But number one, I think, is going to be, you know, more in the 20-21 range, something around there.
All right, I think that'll do it for today. Anything you want to talk about? I know people are probably fiending for content overall after, you know, we've had this kind of break for All-Star.
So I wrote about, or I'm going to write about Basketball Without Borders for Real GM. I'm hoping that'll come out Friday. The players that were interesting takeaways, I also talked about that a little bit with Sam Vecenie on his show. And I have Real GM Radio with Jonathan Charks of The Ringer. That will come out on Friday. We record it today, as long as I get it edited in time, but I will. And we're going to have more Dunked On in the near future, because we're doing the different release schedule this week.
Yep. Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. So give you a little entertainment over the weekend. Not sure what we're going to talk about yet, but it'll be interesting. It's awesome. You can trust us, right? I mean, nothing could be more entertaining than this podcast has been to set up the tank race. And I think in concert with this, we'll probably have to do a few more of these double tank games that you have highlighted for Dunked On breakdowns for a little comedic relief for us. So again, don't forget about our sponsors as well. Stamps.com, use that Capspace code, or Movement Watches, MVMT.com/Capspace, to check out some beautiful new watches and get 15% off. Talk to y'all tomorrow. Till then.